Since 1898, Marquee Who's Who has offered our distinguished listees the opportunity to set themselves apart through our print publications. Now, Marquee Radio offers these illustrious professionals the chance to shine in our one-on-one interviews. My guest today is Nancy Del Grande, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Geotemp Corporation. How are you doing today, Nancy?
Oh, I'm doing just fine, thank you.
I'm glad to hear it. So why don't you start by telling us how you became involved in science?
Well, I became involved in science because my family was involved in science.
Mm-hmm.
During the 40s, we lived next door to Columbia University, just across the street on 120th and Columbia University in New York City. And Columbia University was right there. We valued education in our family at the university level. In the 1940s, my dad mentored his doctoral candidates and helped our country find the global resources needed to win World War II. So this was important to me as a young girl.
Mm-hmm.
And my goal then
was to
study physics.
Why physics particularly?
Because I could do something like the family does, and that was all I knew about. Not physics necessarily, but I got interested in the atom and understanding it, so I wanted to study this.
Okay. And once you began your work in physics, what made you realize that this was where you wanted to be?
Well, I decided when I was a teen where I wanted to go, and so I tried my best. I went to Mount Holyoke College for an undergraduate degree, and then I went to Stanford University for a master's degree, hopefully a PhD, but it didn't work out that way. But I had opportunities that I'd sort of already planned. When I was in my teens, I wanted to go to Los Alamos, so I applied and got into Livermore, which was a similar sister sort of a laboratory as to Los Alamos, because then I can do what my dad had helped find all the resources that would help win World War II. So I decided my job would be to try and go to a laboratory after I understood physics and contribute to prevent World War III.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say your goal was, to become an educator or to become a scientist in the more practical sense?
Oh, to become a scientist and develop a technology that could be used to make a safer world and to save lives and to prevent develop technology that would help prevent or give our country strength so that we could prevent World War III.
And in your estimation, have you accomplished that?
Have I prevented? I helped a lot of other people, and they helped me.
Mm-hmm.
We learned together, and I think we helped this country as long as I stayed at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, and I worked on a method which measured over 1 million degree temperatures of a contained underground nuclear explosion at the Nevada test site, and this I did in the early 60s. And sort of this was my way of following what the program was there and sort of leading it in the measurement of temperatures over 1 million degrees. And I sort of was first to develop the measurement of really hot temperatures. And at the same time, my sister was helping. Well, she was the first or second, one of the first women neurosurgeons, board certified by the Harvey Cushion Board Certification Committee, also during the 60s. So we were sort of working the type of thing that we grew up knowing Dad was working science geology, my sister was working medicine, and doing surgery, and I was working at the National Lab to strengthen our country so that we would be protected from a third world war.
It's very interesting to me that all the women in your family seem to have been involved in STEM, when that was really not heard of in that at that point in time in the 1960s. So what was your experience like as a woman in science when that was very much a male-dominated field, and in some ways still is?
Well, I loved physics. I loved the work I did, and I loved working on interesting, exciting, and challenging problems, and I loved the companionship and the help that I received from the male scientists that, you know, we were all working on something exciting that was important. And so I was challenged and I was happy. There were some problems, of course. I was in charge of an event that took place at the Nevada test site, in charge of the physics, and they put physicists in charge of events. And they didn't have any facilities for women in the foreign, in the Nevada test site. So in order to solve that problem so I could do a good job with my assignment, they built an outhouse, and they painted it pink, and the inside it said, "Smile, Nancy, you're on candid camera." So it was a bit of a diversity, but the people, the guys and women and men that I worked with were outstanding, wonderful people.
So you touched on your work briefly before. You mentioned your work measuring very, very high temperatures. Are there any other exciting projects you'd like to talk about?
Well, recently I retired from the laboratory so I could pursue the company that I founded, and that was in, so, well, I did an experiment. I wanted to do archaeology in Israel and also in the U.S. first and then in Israel, and the laboratory just didn't have a program that funded things like that, so they selected my proposal, that the scientists selected it in the top 10 out of 158, I think. But management vetoed it as not being part of a funded program. So, but they told me to, they encouraged me and let me start Geotemp as long as I did it on my own time, on weekends and after I retired. So when I really got excited about, this physicist, laser physicist from Israel, came out to a meeting of the IEEE engineering in San Francisco, and he had read, he knew about the patent that I had, that had been issued, of my work, of my methods patent that came out in 1977. And so Professor Kaufman said that I had the only way that could do something really critical and really important for the century, for the 20th and the 21st century, and that was to find the exact site of King Solomon's temple, or Herod's temple, mm-hmm. or both. And that my method was the only way to do this. And this really excited me, that I could do something that was really important, and that I had the only method that a laser physicist thought would work for this, because it was very hard to get images at this particular archaeological site in Israel. And so anyway, I retired from the lab, met with a friend who was an engineer who had developed the Aerostar drone, which was also used in America, but this was developed in Israel. And so he said that he could help me get some images of that site. And so he was able to fly at 10,000 feet above ground and pick up some images that I told him when to look and where to look and how to look. And sure enough, he sent me the results of his imagery, and a friend and I in my kitchen area looked at the results and analyzed and found the image that we were looking for that would give the location of the drainage channel that still existed, that was, we haven't proven yet. I don't have a chunk of the channel yet, but I would really like to talk with some of the experts, the archaeology experts, and I have a way that would excite them so they could see whose theory is correct, because I just give the location and pathway. The results that I measured show the location and pathway of the drainage channel underneath the Dome of the Rock archaeological site taken in 2002. And so this is exciting, but what would even be more exciting is if they dug at the right place, which this shows, and that is possible, not against all the rules and regulations, and that could tell the existence and have a chunk of the drainage channel could be tested for the dating to prove that it originated in the days of King Solomon or in the days of Herod the Great.
I see. So this is very much a work still in progress.
Yes.
All right. So we certainly hope that you'll keep us advised if anything comes of that. It's certainly very exciting archaeological news. But we've gone this long without talking much about Geotemp Corporation, so I'd like to devote a little bit of time to that. Can you tell us briefly what the mission of Geotemp Corporation is and what kind of work you do there?
Well, the mission has always been to use science to help mankind. Now, that's not always possible to make money, and that's the reason for a business, but we have never lost sight of the fact that there are a lot of things you can do if you understand the basic physics behind measuring accurate temperature measurements. And so one thing I learned and proved, I guess, when I was still working at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, was that we could find underground or under bridge deck defects. We could find underground voids or empty spaces associated with various structures like tunnels or like, there are just so many structures like pipelines that have defects, have leaks. And we actually found delaminated bridge decks. And direct is what is registered. This is about Geotemp. And direct is registered and U.S. registered, and it stands for dual infrared effusivity computed tomography, but we don't really say all those unless we're talking to scientists. Direct is a novel process that remotely senses the ground below It can resolve 0.2 degree surface temperature differences, minimize effects of background clutter, and remove false calls. It can sense subsurface structure gaps or cracks apart from other unseen surface and subsurface features. GeoTemp's field team has the demonstrated ability to view unseen empty spaces, infrared voids, contained within subsurface targets such as aquifers, landmines, bridge gaps, drains, pipelines, tunnels, and bunkers, apart from clutter, at survey heights from 3 meters to 3 kilometers. This often provides positive results under conditions where other processes have been shown to be less effective. And that was the description that I wrote of GeoTemp, what it does and what its novel process does, without telling them how to do it. And we found them in a way that hadn't been successfully done before, that was a lot better than dragging a chain across to bridge deck and listening for the echoes. We had a Winnebago with a mast with a couple of infrared scanners on top of the mast, looking at the bridge deck as we drove across at 25 miles an hour. And we found this image that when we took the pavement off was conformed to the image of the deep gap in the bridge deck due to corrosion from the metal that supported the concrete. So we did that for the federal administration, FHWA, while I was in the engineering division of the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. And that same physics that found the million degree temperatures of underground nuclear explosions, also the same law, which I expanded and made into an approximation that was very good for making easy understanding. Anyway, we got images of the defects in the bridge deck that would save time and money for the country. And we also looked at aircraft skins while I was at Lawrence Livermore National Lab and for the FAA. And so there are a lot of possibilities if you know how to make accurate temperature measurements. So there's just a lot of possibilities that we would like to do. And I have a field team that goes out to the field and they make good measurements. And we're looking for some action in this direction because we want to keep people happy and we want to keep them funded. And so that takes a lot of effort.
Mm-hmm. So, Nancy, at this point, I'd like to ask you a question that I ask all of my interviewees. And that is, if you look back on your life as a whole and your career as a whole, what do you think has been the most important lesson that you learned?
To persevere, to listen, to hear others, to go ahead with a focused direction, and not to get discouraged, and to learn from my mistakes. Because you always make mistakes, and if you don't try, if you're afraid of failing, then you never succeed. But if you, I always wanted to shoot the moon in a game that they used to play, rather than to make a little change. And people would try and teach me that the best way to do is to make a little change each year. And I never agreed with them. I didn't know why. And I made a poem once. Why not? So it was easy to... I don't have in front of me the poem. Oh, well, let's see, maybe I do. Anyway, it's called Unearthing the First and Second Jewish Temple. Why locate the drain where the ancient Jewish temples once stood? Because of 21st century subsurface imaging method proved we could. What did the buried drainage channel image reveal to solve a mystery? The drain's location near the Dome of the Rock would confirm history. Evidence of where the sacrificial altar stood is written in God's Word, the Bible, the Torah, the Mishnah, and the Talmud, so we have heard. A drone found a buried drain from far above the Dome of the Rock site. Verifying the Temple Mount where the temple altar stood was right. Why prove the Jewish temples existed if temple denial is in vain? Because temple denial mocks historical truth for political gain. It ignores temple evidence by Flavius Josephus and would appear to discount writings by Roman and Greek historians, which are clear. That was a little poem I wrote.
Well, very good.
10 years ago.
Thank you, Nancy, for taking the time out of your day to share your story with our listeners. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to Marquee Radio. Stay tuned for more in-depth and informative interviews with professionals from all walks of life.